The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 320, recorded on August 5th, 2013. Welcome to the 320th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 153rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am Jordan Lund.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and has a gaming history this month, this week. So what have you been playing, Jordan?
I have been playing new Microsoft Surface Owner.
Yes, you announced that.
Yes, I'm recording it right now on my Surface Pro. I am doing multitasking on a tablet screen.
I was about to say, that's the big bonus. Hey, guess what? You can finally multitask.
I have Skype up and running on one side, and I have the podcast notes on the other side, and it's been great. I have no complaints.
Pro. This is not the RT that was discounted by $150.
This is the Pro. The Pro actually went on sale for $100 off on Sunday, and it's going to be on sale for the rest of the month. They were kind enough to adjust my purchase price for me since I'm within the return period.
Well, here's the thing, that's your local store, right? It's not
that's
Microsoft.
Correct. The Microsoft store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Microsoft unilaterally lowered the price of the RT.
They unilaterally cut the price of the Pro $100 for the month of August.
Microsoft did.
Microsoft did, yeah. It was all over the news sites on Sunday. Oh, okay. That's how I found out about it.
Oh, okay. What's the difference between the RT and the Pro again?
The RT version does not run Windows apps. It only runs Windows Store apps.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to run Windows applications, you need the Pro version. It has the full version of Windows 8.
Right. So aside from the Surface Pro, what have you been playing?
Well, I've been getting games up and running on the Surface Pro is what I've been doing. I've been looking in the store for games. I got MAME up and running on it. I haven't connected my Steam account yet. That's going to be next.
You know what I haven't done? I haven't transferred my MAME from my old Dell to the iBuyPower yet. And I have like 200 arcade games on that thing.
Well, this machine has an i5 processor and Intel HD 4000 graphics, so it can run more or less any MAME stuff without a trouble. Higher-end games are going to be a problem for it, but I didn't buy it for higher-end games. So
I'm actually looking at a nice $320 laptop.
Nice.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, it needs to be – oh, boy. What is the name of that new Wi-Fi connection? 803-point-something-something?
Something, something, yes.
Yeah, so I need a laptop that can do that because my other laptop could not do that. Therefore, I couldn't take notes or write articles at E3, which is problematic, you know.
Because that was the only Wi-Fi available. The other channels would have been saturated. Yeah, that makes sense.
Not only that, but, you know, that was the only channel available in this thing anyway. So
okay.
I had to use my hotel, but the thing is that, you know, I'd waste a lot of time if – I can't sit down in the media room and write down the articles while they're still fresh in my head, you know?
So, well, you can sit down and write them. You're just not able to upload them or send them.
Well, keep in mind, you know, I'm going to be walking around 8 hours in that place, you know? I'm going to be sitting down for an hour or two anyway.
Oh, I've been there. I've done that. Yep, I know how it goes.
If I'm going to be sitting down doing nothing, I might as well be productive.
That's true.
So, but the thing about it is it has a 500 gigabyte hard drive, and that's about all I care about, really.
Yeah. No, I bought the netbook that I've been recording the show on for the last 2 or 3 years. I bought to cover PAX because I had no mobile device capable of, you know, writing articles and processing photos and stuff like that. That little netbook was, you know, a couple hundred dollars, and it worked great up until, you know, now. So it's just a little old. So it was time to upgrade it, and I upgraded from my iPad as well.
Yeah, I'm not into netbooks. I'd rather have a real laptop, you know, with a drive that I can actually pop a movie in on occasion.
Well, you know, this netbook, even though it's 3 or 4 years old, has a 250 gig hard drive in it and discrete ATI Radeon graphics, and I upgraded it to 4 gigs of RAM and Windows 7 Professional.
I also learned I don't need a 17-inch laptop either.
Nobody needs a 17-inch laptop.
Well, I mean, I had one, but, you know, it was good for movies, I guess. It's good for media, but, you know, a 15.6 is fine enough for me. Actually, I don't care about a 14 either. I mean, the 14 is fine, too. But so as for me, I have been playing a lot of Civ 5, you know, Civilization 5. I mean, with the Brave New World expansion, together with the Gods and Kings expansion, it's exactly the Civilization that people had wanted, you know, only 3 years later, you know. So they finally fixed it.
I don't follow Civ, so I don't know what was wrong with it. What was wrong with Civ that they had to fix?
It wasn't Civ. It didn't feel like Civ. It didn't feel – it felt like some other strategy game impersonating Civ. You know, for what, let me put it this way. In order to get a cultural victory, you had to have a ramrod straight, you know, goal that you're going to do a cultural victory. Or else you couldn't do it, you know. So, in other words, it forced you into strategies, you know, you couldn't bend your strategies, you know, to follow what, you know, it's like in, with all the expansions in now, if I'm in a desert with a lot of quarries, say, you know, the first thing that happens is, you know, when I found my new religion, you know what, oh, guess what, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be one of the people who worship stone, so, you know, all those quarries are going to add to my faith. You know, and things that happen down the line, I'm able to change my strategy and adapt to what's going on. With the original Civ 5, and it also penalized you for having fewer cities, which I just thought was back. I mean, it penalized you for having too many cities, you know, for having your civilization become too big. And I thought that was backwards. You know?
Interesting.
So
I could see that in a sustainability kind of thing. Well, you become too big, it becomes a problem.
You know, you were limited. If you really wanted to have a cultural victory, you could only have two or three cities. Let me put it that way. Mm. You know, that isn't kind of realistic, you know. What I love now is that when you're doing a cultural victory now instead of getting, you know, getting cultures, I mean policies, now you're actually swaying other countries. You have to have 10 countries become in awe of your culture. And whenever a country becomes in awe of your country, their leader pops up and says, "Stop it. I can't believe that my country is enjoying your blue jeans and rock music." Which is funny if they're in awe of you in the Renaissance.
That's funny, yeah.
So the blue jeans started in 1830 something. So that's like 200.
It doesn't surprise me, yeah.
But anyways, so the thing is that it feels more like Civ. You know, you can play the strategies as they pop up. It's more flexible. One of the best things that happened this week is that one civilization, particularly a weak one, kept on harassing me and denouncing me and calling me big and mean. So what happens is that I took 4 battleships, sailed into their harbor, their capital, and just, you know, oh, look, I have battleships and submarines. You have frigates. Guess what's going to happen to you? So I have marines. You have muskets. Guess what's going to happen? So it was pretty, and I was close to getting tanks too. So they weren't exactly a technologically advanced, you know, but you know, you screw with me and you're like that, shit's going to go down and I'm going to make sure that you pay for it. So, and the thing is, I could have conquered every country in that game as well if I had wanted to, but I got my culture victory. I actually wanted to have had a spaceship victory, you know, in which you fly to Alpha Centauri. But that'll wait.
Doesn't that take a long time?
Yeah, it goes into the future. I mean, I won in the year 1923, I believe.
Okay.
This new game I'm playing, I'm next door to the Mongols, so you can imagine how fun that is.
Better build a wall.
Yeah, well, they built the Great Wall of China before I did. They have the wall.
Oh,
fortunately,
okay.
Fortunately, I'm a little bit more technically advanced, so when dynamite is invented, the Great Wall becomes obsolete. With obvious reasons, you know. So anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Take it away, Jordan.
Assassin's Creed series will have end, assures Ubisoft. This comes to us from Eurogamer. It seems like the storyline of Assassin's Creed has no end in sight, even withstanding the deaths of key characters. But Assassin's Creed 4 game director Ashraf Ismail insists that the series will have an ending. Ismail stated in an interview, quote, "The brand team that sits on top and is filled with writers and designers concerned with the series' overall arc. So there's an overall arc, and each iteration has its place inside this. We have an idea of where the end is, what the end is. Of course, Ubisoft has 3 Assassin's Creed games in development simultaneously, making finding a closure a little difficult."
That should be closure.
"Making finding closure a little difficult." Ismail explained, quote, we are now able to seed stuff earlier and earlier in a game. So, for example, in Assassin's Creed 4, we have Edward, who is seeded in Assassin's Creed 3, but there's a lot more stuff in our game that is hinting at other possibilities. Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag is due to be released on PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3 on the 29th of October 2013, and next gen sometime after that.
Yeah, I don't think the Wii U is a part of that next gen.
I don't think so.
Is it? Right. I think it is coming.
I think they are doing a Wii U version. Yeah, they're doing a version.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they'll sell 10 or 11 copies. The thing is that, I have doubts about this. I mean, they may think they know where the end is, but when you have three Assassin's Creed games being developed at the same time, that sort of belies that, I think
maybe four, because there's rumors of a follow-up to the Vita game.
The thing is that, I think what they mean by series end is when they're running out of money on that series. I mean, at least Mass Effect 3 had closure. I mean, they may be making more Mass Effects, but at least Commander Shepard's story is over.
The thing with Assassin's Creed is they really need to pick up the pace, because if you paid attention in any of the previous games, right, at the end of each game, you get to see the big map where all the other artifacts all over the world are. And so far, we've seen about, two, three of them, something like that. So there's about 57 more that are unaccounted for.
Well, the pace really slowed down with Assassin's Creed 2, because you had Assassin's Creed 2, but you stayed with Ezio for two more games.
You stayed with Ezio for two more games, and then in Assassin's Creed 3, nothing really happens.
Okay. Sticking around with Ezio for another game, I was fine with that. But I started getting bored with him at the third game. That was the first time I played an Assassin's Creed game that I did not finish.
See, I didn't have a problem with that, because each iteration gave you more of something to do that I really enjoyed. So,
The third of the Assassin's Creed 2 games gave you tower defense, and that was a big pain in the balls. they went into, I would have preferred it if they went back to Assassin's Creed 1, in which you actually assassinated people. You had to set up your targets, you had to find a creative way to get to your targets, then you assassinated them. Boom. That was the game.
And most of the Creed most had of the some killing, of that,
but it's the game has been drifting away from assassination.
Most of the killings, particularly in 3, were one hit wonders. You just run up to the guy, stab him in the neck, and run away.
Yeah, I mean, what I want, and in Assassin's Creed, when you assassinated someone, it was a bitch to try and get away, especially near the end, because everybody was alerted. You had to run all over the place. You had to hide, and they said, "No, we found you." Oh, frigate! And you had to. It was a long time, the last assassination before, you get up to the big bad, the last assassination, I spent 10 minutes trying to get away from it. And it was fun the entire time. It was cat and mouse.
See, I never bothered running, because I was too good at combat by that point in time. So I would just stay in one place and kill everybody.
But, that wasn't my option. But in Assassin's Creed 2, you know how you got away? You ran in one direction and kept running and running and running, and you're free.
Yeah.
Boring.
Grand Theft Auto rules.
Assassin's Creed 2 had a lot going for it, so that you didn't really notice that. I mean, I noticed it, but, I wasn't too brokenhearted about it, especially since I was able to unlock Altair's, armor. That was really cool when you did all the sewers and you were able to get all the keys to unlock his armor.
For the avatar item, or are you talking about something different?
No, you Altair's outfit. Remember?
Oh, okay.
You unlock you get all six unlocks, and it unlocks his outfit. So you can dress like Altair.
I thought you were talking about the avatar outfit in Xbox Live Arcade.
No.
Where you can dress your... Yeah.
No. No.
Because I unlocked something that let me do something like that. I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure I unlocked some stuff. The thing that I enjoyed unlocking was from Halo Waypoint, in which you could unlock a little guilty spark.
Yeah, they haven't done a lot with unlocking stuff in games. I wonder why.
Well, that's because everybody's getting ready for the Xbox One and unlocking stuff for that.
Well, I mean, over the course of the, 6 or 7 years that the 360 has been around, I mean, one of the things they promised
people buy too many of that stuff instead of
people do buy a lot of,
why give something away for free if they're going to buy it?
That's
unfortunately,
true.
Like I said, the Halo, there's also just so much you can do. I mean, You also could have unlocked the little Warthog, you know, from Halo Waypoint as well.
The remote control Warthog, yeah.
Yeah, but I prefer Guilty Spark. It's more fun. So we're going to move on to the next item. And this one's very interesting in lieu. Well, the next two items are very interesting in lieu of last week's. Because if you remember, last week we discussed how World of Warcraft was down to 7.7 million registered users. I mean, paying subscribers, right? Well, we were talking about MMOs that might come and kick World of Warcraft's ass. And EverQuest Next gameplay revealed, accepting beta registration. Sony Online Entertainment showed off EverQuest Next gameplay for the first time at SOE Live 2013, and the future seems to be voxels, as the MMO displayed itself as an action RPG MMO with real-time combat and destructible environments. EverQuest Next also aims to break the World of Warcraft mold with advanced, quote-unquote, emergent AI, the ability to permanently build the game alongside the dev team, and, quote-unquote, horizontal level advancement where players don't grind, rather they accomplish feats to gain new abilities. Now, by the way, when I say that, it makes it sound like, well, you keep on using this axe and you become proficient in axe. No. What happens is that you can actually earn your abilities. So you go on quests and you earn your abilities that way, you know? So, like, you go on a quest to be able to wear heavy armor, basically, that sort of thing. So, have you seen EverQuest Next?
I have not.
I was pretty impressed.
I'm vaguely aware of the original EverQuest.
Evercrack. You said it called it Evercrack last week.
Yeah, Evercrack. I've not played EverQuest. So, yeah.
If you check the videos, it's quite impressive because everything's done with voxels. Now, you know what voxels are, right? They're 3D pixels. Well, the thing is that now what happens is you can have permanent deformation in the MMO world with voxels. So, you know, you have this big battle and the ground is all torn up. It's going to remain that way for a while. Although, I'm pretty sure that they have guards against, say, people deciding to dig trenches just for hell of it, you know, having these mile-long holes that people could fall through and just die from. You know, I'm pretty sure that there will be some healing of land over time. But it is kind of cool that, you know, when you do something that's drastic in the game, it'll remain there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's the whole point of having a persistent online world, is that stuff is supposed to stick around.
So I'm pretty sure this is free to play. I mean, I don't know many MMOs that start out subscription based.
That's true. And with the whole action RPG side of it, it makes it sound like they're more going after League of Legends than they are after World of Warcraft.
I think it would be more like going after Diablo. And the thing is that, you know what? This game does not seem like a World of Warcraft clone to begin with. You know, it doesn't even seem like a Terra clone. And Terra or Vindictus or any of the other action RPG things, it seems more like a Diablo MMO, basically.
Hmm.
Which is basically what World of Warcraft was for a while, you know, because it shared a lot with it shared more with Diablo than it did with Warcraft. Especially, you know, I mean, the thing about World of Warcraft is basically the loot. I mean, that's what makes World of Warcraft so addictive, is the loot grind. So I'm wondering if EverQuest Next is going to be able to do that.
I can't see why not. I mean,
well, the problem with, you know, I started playing PlanetSide 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I got bored quickly. And that did not happen when I was playing PlanetSide and it was a subscription. It wasn't because I was paying $15 a month to play PlanetSide. It's just that the game seemed off, and I think it was because of the fact it was free to play. I mean, for some reason, you know, you have to be careful when you're doing a free to play game, because sometimes it doesn't feel rewarding.
It's the same thing as pirated games, right? People that pirate their games don't have the same level of attachment. They collect them, but they very rarely play them.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, I collected MAME games and I loved playing them. And as
that's
I was,
more,
I was about
more
to say,
abandonware than pure piracy.
Well, Lord of the Rings Online is free to play, but it's still a great game that I don't feel gypped playing if I play it.
Right.
You know, I just get the impression that there's less content that's offered to people when it's free to play, even if they're a premium member, which means you're paying a subscription.
Right.
A lot of it is too divorced. You know, oh, you have to get, you know, this. Everything is modularized, I think it is, you know, in which you have this as a module because you might not be able to have a free, you know, someone who's actually free to play there. You know, so when you're paying a subscription, everything is there. Everything, you know, it's not modularized. It's solid. I think that's it. I think a lot of free-to-play MMOs don't feel solid.
I don't know. I don't play free-to-play games, so I wouldn't know.
So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan. And by the way, this is also related. Now, last week, I said that Pressure Titan was dead and gone and, you know, forget about it. Well, apparently Blizzard doesn't think so. Go ahead.
This is why we're recording things on Mondays now. Blizzard confirms Project Titan overhaul, quote, unlikely to be subscription-based. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. World of Warcraft has been declining in recent months, down to 7.7 million paid subscribers, and questions have been posed about what the next Blizzard MMO would be and what the status of Project Titan is. Blizzard boss Mike Morhaime has confirmed that Project Titan has been overhauled. During an investor call, Morhaime stated that resources were indeed pulled from Titan, but it's still in development after being overhauled. He also mentioned that Titan was, quote, unlikely to be a subscription-based MMORPG, and that the developer was trying to figure out what a new direction the MMO would take. The investor call revealed that Blizzard's revenues dropped 65% year-to-date from $634 million June 2012 to $224 million June 2013. Blizzard's operating income was even more drastic, dropped 84% year-to-date from $371 million to $60 million.
But you know what? I don't think that's World of Warcraft's fault. You know whose fault it is? It's Diablo 3's fault. I mean,
yeah.
Diablo 3 got bad word of mouth and people didn't buy it. I mean, that was their big thing. You know, they were counting on a lot from Diablo 3.
Well, and StarCraft must have faded really quickly too.
I don't know the StarCraft is just a one-time purchase.
Yeah.
I mean, they were expecting a lot from getting the thing is that they were going to get a percentage from the real money store, remember?
Stuff like Diablo 2 still sells, right? I mean, there could have been a regular market for StarCraft sales. It just never materialized.
Well, I mean, everybody in Korea bought it. So, you know, it's interesting because last I heard about Project Titan was that it was going to be for younger kids. You know, it was going to be for people who are younger, not older people.
Baby's first MMORPG?
Something like that, but not baby, more like 10 to 15 or something like that. Something that was more family friendly, let me put it that way. But I don't know, Blizzard's in serious trouble here. I mean, not seriously.
Well, yeah, their revenue is dropping like a rock, so yeah, they need to do something.
Well, the thing is that they just need to scale back and just focus on three games. I mean, you know, and just I don't know if they can. I'm still wondering about World of Warcraft going free to play. If they'd actually be able to make money that way.
I'm still bitter over the whole D&D game that just was a disaster.
D&D Online is still around. It's free to play.
D&D Online is still around, but you know, before that, there was a Neverwinter Nights installation that was supposed to be the next big
this
thing.
This Neverwinter Nights. You mean the one that was just released?
Failed miserably.
Oh, I don't know.
It was buggy. It didn't work.
But the thing is, I was asked to beta test that thing several times. I'm wondering what happened to
So it's your fault.
Well, I'm just wondering what happened to beta testing. If people were beta testing this, did they listen?
I really wonder if they beta test anything anymore. I mean, particularly after Assassin's Creed Liberation came out of the box broken, you know, unplayable, as in saved games deleted themselves, unplayable.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know the problem with external beta testers, right? They find things wrong with your game.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They don't want people to find things wrong with their game. QA is told, unless it doesn't wipe your hard drive, we don't care.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, people are sheep enough not to, you know, people have to demand that, you know, not. It is going to tie into the question of the week I wrote late in that I added late. What's it called? Which we'll get to. But people have to learn. You know, people got to be careful about pre-ordering.
Oh, absolutely, and we'll get to the whole pre-order topic towards the end here.
Yeah, so we're going to move on to the next item. EA claims freedom of speech in NCAA lawsuit appeal. Court rejects it. From Strategy Informer. During a lawsuit by former collegiate football players about Electronic Arts using their likenesses to sell NCAA football games, the publisher attempted to invoke First Amendment rights on the issue, stating they were permitted to use their likenesses as a part of freedom of speech. The court denied the motion. The plaintiffs, led by former Arizona State University and University of Nebraska starting quarterback Sam Keller, noted EA's cancellation of their NCAA contract as proof of culpability. Keller's attorney, Steve Berman, pronounced, "Today's ruling, combined with the NCAA's decision not to renew its license, speaks volumes about the actions of the defendants. We are confident that EA and the NCAA made millions of dollars at the expense of student-athletes by improperly taking property belonged to the athletes and the athletes alone. This ruling gives us a chance to not only recover the value of the images for the college athletes, but also to punish EA and NCAA for intentionally profiting off things they knew were off limits to them." Which is very odd because the NCAA comes down hard on people who dare make money off their images.
Well, make money off their images, but the other part of it is too that and the ugly side of this story is that college athletes in football, baseball, basketball are legally prevented from profiting off their performances.
Just silly.
And so, you know, the idea that EA could make a game and use all these athletes' images and then argue free speech and as an argument to not have to pay them is beyond the pale. Now, I could see him making the argument of, hey, we would love to pay these athletes, but the NCAA won't let us, make the NCAA the bad guy. You know, that would have been a valid way of going down it, because I'm sure it's in the contract between the NCAA and EA. You know, and that would be not EA's fault. It's simply the way the NCAA does business.
You know, if I have the
and perfect, has done business for a generation.
You know, I have the perfect solution to all of this, really. For the NCAA, and that is just pay athletes minimum wage for the time that they work on football and
well,
other
there
sports.
Well, the NCAA's argument has been historically that
they're student athletes, which is BS.
Well, not that they're student athletes, but that by benefit of playing in the NCAA, that positions them for a career in pro sports, and that's their payment.
Which is silly.
Which is silly. Because you get hurt, you're done.
Well, for one thing, let's say per team, even the best teams are only going to have five or six of their players go to the NFL, and most teams won't have any, you know, maybe correct. One, you know. And my point is, you know, these guys can't have, you know, a lot of college students take part-time jobs, you know, to you know, even if they have a scholarship, you know, because the scholarship isn't going to allow you to eat, is it? Although there are some scholarships
include a food thing.
But
yeah.
Even the people with the scholarships, they still have to ride home if they want to go see a show or something, you know.
Right.
So, you know what? If students with actual scholarships that are not football scholarships, just regular scholarships, can work, you know, off campus, well, screw it. Let football players get paid for their time, minimum wage. So you can't say they're profiting because they're getting paid minimum wage. You know,
right.
And that would solve everything. But the NCAA doesn't want to do that. So the athletes, you know, have to nickel and dime themselves, you know, or try and get jobs, which is almost impossible because for them, it's either football, schoolwork or a job. And you can only have one of the three.
Pick one. Yeah.
Yeah. So now one thing that also happened, I don't know if we covered this, is that another developer – the developer of the original Madden, the original John Madden football, won his case against EA and is getting paid for royalties for all Madden games up till 1997, and now he's trying for till now. I don't think he'll get that, but you know the fact that he's getting paid for the fact that all of the Madden games on console and PC look exactly like their like the game, the original game that he played. So he's getting paid for that. So he is not having a lot of luck lately in the courts recently.
Yeah.
Too bad you have that can't class action suit us clause.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, things have been going against EA and their football program for a couple of years now. I mean, they were told that they couldn't hold the exclusive license for NFL stuff.
They also got smacked in the face by former players when they were doing their classic players.
Correct.
Like Jim Brown was none too pleased, if I remember correctly. But I think they won that case. I'm not sure because the thing is that EA does have a contract with the NFLPA. So
right.
I think that was covered by it. But the problem with it is that I think retired players were saying, hey, we're not getting paid for this. You know?
Exactly.
But I think their beef is with the MLB, NFLPA. I think that they have to deal with their own union on that one. So we're going to move on to the next item, which is intriguing. Go ahead. Oh, wait. Yeah, this is you.
Region-based factions will be in The Crew, and this comes to us from Shaq News. The Crew is an open-world racer that spans the continental United States, and developer Ivory Tower figures that the setting is good premise for having factions based on the country's regions. Players will be able to choose between the East Coast, West Coast, the South, Mountain States, and Midwest, and the car designs and customization would reflect the regions, giving each faction a distinct flavor. According to creative director Julian Garrigty, we're getting a tattoo artist who works on the team to develop a visual identity. I genuinely think it's a question of visual identity. That's why we're working so much on, okay, what is the spirit of the West Coast? How do we design a West Coast that is super attractive to people who don't know the West Coast? Garrigty also notes that the dev team has to deal with play balance, or players might be incentivized to ally with one faction over another. Players may switch allegiances, but only after a certain period of time has elapsed. The Crew is due to be released on PC, Xbox 360, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 3 in early 2014.
This game is very intriguing because apparently if you try to drive from New York to Los Angeles in the game, it takes you 90 minutes. And, having a game, this is what I always want. This is something I wanted if I was going to make a game based on Autoduel, actually, in which you had a representation of the United States, you know, in which the highways are represented for the most part, you know, and you had an entire continental U.S. to explore, right?
Right.
So this is something that's intriguing. Would you take the Mountain States if you were playing?
It depends on how West Coast the West Coast states are, because the Northwest is completely different than California. There's no comparison between the Northwest and California.
Well, that's just, West Coast, the West Coast and the Mountain States are different factions.
Exactly. So, it would depend on where they put us, you know, if they classify us in the same category as Colorado or if they classify us in the same category as California. Oh. I think we're more Colorado than California.
Well, I think they would have more sporty look to it. While the Mountain States might have sort of like an Audi, you know, an Audi Saab sort of look to them.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I do remember seeing the previews for this, and it looked like a very good game.
Yeah. Maybe the East Coast would have sort of like muscle cars, you know, from the 50s.
Could be.
But the thing is that I think this is one area where microtransactions might do really well with cosmetic stuff, because you know that people like to pimp out their cars and give.
Absolutely, you know. Yeah.
I wonder how much of it is going to be a free customization like you can do with Forza, and how much is going to be decals that you have to pay for. That's the only question. But
I don't know, and I wonder if they'll allow you to design your own stuff.
One of my favorite games for the Commodore 64, by the way, was the Great American Road Race.
I remember
the
that.
Great American Cross Country Road Race, right. And, you know, even though it was very rudimentary, I mean, there was something about if you pick the north route, you know, if you try to go through Minnesota and stuff like that, you run into the danger that you might hit into a snowstorm, right? Or if you know. So there's that, you know, and I'm wondering how detailed it's going to be in terms of weather, you know.
Right.
And, you know, yeah. I wonder if they will have that, because I know it's going to have – it's going to be your typical open world map in which you go to a hotspot, right? And when you reach that hotspot, you can do a race from there. But what I would like to see, and I'm pretty sure they'll probably include it because it's too good to miss, is having cross-continental routes, you know, races in which people have to race different legs of a race, which would be really cool. I mean, you say you have a Boston to Seattle race, right?
Right, right.
And every player has to pick the first leg of their race, you know, which way they want to go. And they're timed that way, you know, and you go leg by leg rather than one long continuous race. You know, you sort of do like a cannonball run in which you have to pick the route that you want to go each time, you know, and you sort of have times on each route. And the, you know, you total your time to see if you were in first place when you went from Boston to Seattle or from San Francisco to Miami, stuff like that. It's going to be interesting to see what this game is like. And I'm probably going to get it for the Xbox One because I'm sick of getting current gen games. I want next gen. I want new hotness, damn it.
Well, that's part of the reason that I'm holding off on Watch Dogs. I don't think it makes sense to get it on a current gen machine.
Unless you get it on PC, which is a which is always a next gen machine, really. I might get it on PC and then maybe the Xbox One. I mean,
I bet it won't run on Intel HD 4000 graphics on the Surface Pro.
No. Just although it's going to have, it's have that tablet feeling. Functionality though.
Yeah. That's true. There is like second screen capabilities that it does do. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Oh, there's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Wonder if are you going to start testing out Smart Glass?
I have the Smart Glass app. I haven't found anything that uses it yet, but I do have the Smart Glass app. Yes.
Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback from Alpha Shard. Good show, guys, but I'm missing Paul and Dan. And by the way,
we miss Paul and Dan too.
But by the way, Dan does listen to the podcast, so maybe him hearing.
He does Peter. Listen to the podcast, and I did get to talk to him when I was testing my new microphone. Well, so, yeah.
If he sees that the readers want him back or the listeners want him back, maybe he'll come back for an episode.
We'll just have to say his name three times, and he shall appear. Dan, Dan, Dan. Damn it!
I thought you were going to say Beetlejuice. I heard you mentioning you're playing Shadowrun Returns, Jonah, and how are you liking the game? I've gotten it myself, and it seems to have a short campaign, seeming to rely on the community to create campaigns themselves, like with the Neverwinter games. I haven't gotten back to it since I started playing because I've just been so busy, you know, and that's the problem with getting old and rickety is that you don't have time for games no more.
You know? I know, it's horrible.
But I'm enjoying the game as it is. You know, I know it. I realize it's more or less a bare bones. Well, not bare bones, but, you know, it's a very slimlined game, which does what it's supposed to do. And that's what I backed it for, you know?
Right.
I backed it for $15, I believe. So I got $5 off on it. But the thing is that, you know what? I don't like games that overly rely on community content, like Little Big Planet. You know, it's like Media Molecule said, well, you know what? You guys make the content. We're tired. But on the other hand, you know, this is an RPG, and RPGs are different because they're more creative in terms of story. And already someone is trying to, and I said this last week, already someone is trying to redo the entire console version of Shadowrun, which should be interesting. Now, you didn't
play. It could be. Yep.
You didn't play Shadowrun on the Genesis or SNES, did you?
I don't remember Shadowrun, no.
Okay. Moving on. Speaking of Sierra Online and Kickstarter, Hero U was being made by the Corey being okay. Speaking of Sierra Online and Kickstarter, Hero U was being made by the Coreys was mentioning the various other creative leads also kickstarting their own old franchises as well. Although since they don't have the original IP, like Space Quest is now Space Venture. Hero U, I think I remember that adventure game. Do you?
I don't recall that game, no.
Yeah, it's currently on Kickstarter, and it actually barely made its Kickstarter fund, so it's a go. By the way, have you noticed that more and more developers have been doing this? You know, they finished their Kickstarter, and now you can continue to donate via PayPal in case you missed the Kickstarter, which is how Star Citizen has gotten to $15 million. And they're already aiming for $16 and $17 million.
What's the stretch goal on $17 million?
Well, the current one, they added a new ship. And, one of the things that I really like, and I know it's something that's, you know, what's it called? You say, well, for $17 million, you better. But they're going to have nice, spiffy printed manuals, owner manual.
Oh.
And that's one thing I really miss is big, fat, thick manuals, you know.
I'm surprised it takes $17 million to get a printed manual.
Well, considering how many people are buying the game.
Yeah.
You know, that adds up. But on the other hand, it's a good carrot, you know. And, you know, there are other ships and capital ships that are going to be doing for $16 and $17 million. One of the interesting things, by the way, is American McGee has finished his Kickstarter funding for Alice Otherworlds. And it's not a game. It's going to be an animated film. And the thing about it is that he's negotiating to get the original actress who did Alice and the original actor who did the Cheshire Cat to be in it. So, and he's also, of course, continuing contributions past Kickstarter. I'm just wondering if this is going to be a lead-in to a video game, and why it's a film instead of a video game. And I'm wondering if Electronic Arts, who owns the license, said, "Well, you know what? You can make an Alice movie." You know, and if you make the Alice movie and enough people watch it, we'll let you make an Alice game for us.
I think there's a large number of game developers who really want to be movie directors anyway.
I guess, but you know, I don't know. He made the $200,000 for Alice Otherworld, so it should be interesting. And by the way, if you saw any of the concept paintings for it, they're really fascinating. Like one has Alice walking amongst all these Tesla balls, you know, depicting a Victorian England with Tesla balls all over the place. And one has her walking through a Van Gogh painting of sunflowers. So, I mean, the guy's creative. I just don't see why he has to constantly try and make these fairy tales dark. You know, they were already dark to begin with. You know, it's funny when people try to make a tripped out version of Alice in Wonderland, for example, because Alice in Wonderland is already tripped out.
I still remember American McGee's Strawberry Shortcake.
That wasn't a real game, folks. That was.
I know it wasn't. It was a cartoon strip from Penny Arcade, but it was hilarious right up until American Greetings made them take it down.
Okay, so Alpha Shard also answers our question of the week. As for what I'm playing Civ 5, Brave New World, Minecraft, and Jade Empire. It's my first time playing Jade Empire. Oh, and he got it off Good Old Games, and I can see why it got the reviews it did. A well-deserved reputation. Jade Empire is awesome. And there's
I didn't know they made a PC version of that.
Yes, they did. And it was a limited edition. It was based on the limited edition that came. And there's a reason why BioWare fans are keep on asking for Jade Empire 2 constantly. And that's why BioWare has to, every 6 months, say, oh, you know, we were considering making a Jade Empire 2, but we had to put it off to make, insert name of the game here, maybe Dragon Age, Mass Effect, or whatever game they're making, you know, whatever the new hotness is.
Right.
Atmosphere and challenge in the fights, but at least for me, since I'm not a great action player. Well, one of the good things is that you can put the fighting to casual. Oh, and one other thing, you know what, at the end game, make sure that you have the Jade Golem, you know, power up, because the Jade Golem is good against bosses, you know, because they just whack them twice and they're done. Okay, next letter for you.
From Arthur the Fifth at Getting Old. Happy birthday, Jonah. Congratulations on getting 1 year closer to death. On the bright side, your midlife crisis is just about over. Roll on arthritis, weak knees, and man-sized diaper.
43. I'm not past middle age yet. Okay. I think that's on 55 that you pass middle age and you start.
I will be 44 in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. Oh, I don't know.
Hey,
I don't remember.
We're in the brief time of year and we're the same age.
Yep. At Phil Fish is no longer affiliated with Fishy Gaming Business. Damn, I'm punny. Man, that sounds so childish, but it would have been a better effect if Fez would be Halo or Mass Effect. Personally, I've never heard of Fez until he started making all that racket. In fact, this could have been a good post-mortem marketing effect.
You know, that's true. There is something that people should watch, and that's Indie Game, the video, the movie. And it deals with Jonathan Blow and Braid, Phil Fish, and Fez, and Edward McMullen and Super Meat Boy and what it goes through. And you get more of a sense of who Phil Fish is. Now, if you listen to Annoyed Gamers Red, he went way over the top, way beyond the rules of decorum. So I can imagine why Phil Fish would just blow up at him. But on the other hand, you know, taking your ball and going home isn't exactly an emotional response. But then again, we have to understand that Phil Fish is in his early 20s. And who knows, maybe he has Asperger's or something. We don't know.
It's entirely possible. Yeah. You know? At Shadow of the Eternals, Back from the Dead, again, it's funny how the game is already f***ing with you and it's not even out yet.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, that's a great observation. Hey, guess what, Jordan? You know, you know how the game screws around with you? Well, guess what? It's not even made and it's doing it.
Yep. I really want to see it released. It will also be a nice 5-pound title, considering that it will sell next to no copies on the Wii U, although I'm afraid that this project will not see the light of day, regardless of how many times they put it on Kickstarter, not until Silicon Knights sells off the IP.
By the way, you were right. It is being made for the Wii, so it's compatible with the Wii U, but you can buy it for the Wii as well. You know, the thing is, it's being sold on PC, too, so And, you know, the one thing about this is that it's Kickstarter, which means the people who want to buy it have already bought it.
Right.
You know, so I donate it. I already have a copy that's waiting for me whenever it comes out.
And if it ever comes out,
well,
yes.
Here's if they screw around with Kickstarter, it's going to be unless, if it doesn't make its funding, then we'll see. But here's the thing: I never played Eternal Darkness, so I'm wondering
you should. You don't have a Wii, do you?
No, but you know, I could probably buy a Wii and Eternal Darkness for $50.
I expect you could get one of the original Wiis that has the GameCube backwards compatibility and fire up Eternal Darkness. It's worth playing.
Well, here's the thing. What if I just find an emulator somewhere?
I'm sure there's probably an emulator out there somewhere.
The problem with that is that the GameCube does not use standard CDs or DVDs or anything like that. So that's
true. But I mean, people have been already pirating it forever. I'm sure there are ROMs out there.
Yeah, but I don't pirate stuff. Not anymore. Yeah. The only thing I pirate is MAME. But, you know, I sunk so many quarters into those games, I think I've paid already.
Exactly.
The thing is that I'm wondering – now, the thing that you had a concern about Shadow of the Eternals is that it's not a remake with just better graphics, because that's what they showed in the video.
Yeah, the video that they showed was essentially one of the exact same levels from the original game, and it looked like it had been cleaned up a little bit, but the structure of the level was exactly the same.
But on the other hand, you know what? Is that so bad? I mean, if we get a HD remastered Eternal Darkness,
I would be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, so either way, I win. Although, if it is a true sequel, I will have to, you know, if not get a Wii, or actually get a GameCube, you know, why not just get a GameCube and buy, because why would I want to get a Wii in the first?
Hell, man, I'll loan you my GameCube if you want to play the game. I've got a GameCube sitting here.
I can find a GameCube for $30, actually.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is that,
it looks like they've funded about a third of their goal. Their goal is $750,000, and they are at $215,913 with 18 days.
They've got it made then, because I think 21 days to go, right?
18.
Something, you know, 3 weeks to go. So they have that. It's going to be backed.
At Neil Gaiman making games. That sounds terrific. Neil Gaiman is a talented writer, so the story is bound to be good. Let's hope the game can keep up with him. I read a number of his books, enjoyed all of them. Looking forward to this game.
By the way, I forgot one thing that he wrote, which is actually my favorite of what he wrote, and that is Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I actually prefer much more Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, which was written by Alan Moore and penciled by Kurt Swan and Kurt Schaffenberger. But I did like – did you read Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader?
Absolutely, yes.
I liked the idea in which his reward for being Batman is 8 years of happiness, and then he has to be Batman again.
At the worldwide internet sensation, I played WoW for the first time a few months ago and was very disappointed. It did not live up to my expectations. That is most likely because I played a lot of WoW clones for the past few years and I'm fed up with the genre. I found WoW to be very basic compared to its clones. I'm sure it's a good game, but I just have too much of a life to waste my time on this. P.S. I haven't played Walking Dead past episode 1 yet, so I didn't listen to the last podcast discussion to avoid spoilers. Thought I was successful, but did not expect Jordan's stealthy revelation about Lee. For the future, it would be nice if you could maybe mention that spoilers will follow or put it in the podcast description. That would be nice.
But you know what? Let me ask you a question. Did you really think that Lee was going to live?
I thought Lee was going to live right up until he didn't.
I thought he was going to... No, I had him pegged as dead and from episode 1.
I did notice that after the bite that his skin got progressively grayer as the episodes
continued.
Yeah, but
even way before... Well, you see, now we keep on spoiling, see?
Yeah. We already spoiled it. You know, the cat's already out of the bag.
But you know what? There's a lot of surprises that have nothing to do with it. Because the thing is, for me, I knew that Lee was going to die and and Clementine was going to have to do it. I mean, that was obvious from the end of episode 1. I said, that's what's going to happen to this. The only thing I thought that might be different is because of Clementine's name. If you know the song about Clementine, what happens to Clementine? She dies. You're gone.
Yeah,
and
that's
lost
true.
Forever.
Yeah.
I thought that was the ending I did not want. So anyways, we're down to gaming history, and you know, I don't know what the votes were, but I think I was just going to go in chronological order with these two. So Jordan, we both own this machine, and you get to say what you thought of it. I'm pretty sure you have plenty to say about it. But before we move on, actually, don't say what the picture is until after the episode.
I won't say what the picture is.
Go on.
Okay, gaming history. The Sega Dreamcast. The Dreamcast is a video game console that was released by Sega in November 1998 in Japan and later in 1999 in other territories. It was the first entry in the sixth generation of the video game consoles, preceding its rivals the PlayStation 2, Xbox, and GameCube. The Dreamcast was Sega's last home console to date. In 1997, the Sega Saturn was struggling in North America, and Sega of America president Bernie Stolar was pressing Sega's Japanese headquarters to develop a new platform. Two competing teams were tasked with developing the console, a Skunk Works group headed by IBM researcher Tatsuo Yamamoto, and another team led by Sega hardware engineer Hideki Sato. Sato and his group chose the Hitachi SH4 processor architecture and the VideoLogic Power VR2 graphics processor for their prototype. Yamamoto and his Skunk Works group also opted for the SH4, but the 3DFX hardware. Initially, Sega decided to use Yamamoto's design and suggested to 3DFX that they would be using their hardware in the upcoming console, but Sega later opted to use the Power VR hardware of Sato's design.
By the way, before we move on, do you remember the 3DFX video cards? If I remember correctly, they were a video card company for PCs.
This was attributed to 3DFX's leaking details and technical specifications of the then-secret Dreamcast project when declaring their initial public offering in June 1997, a move which readers on GameSpy.com named, quote, one of the dumbest mistakes in video game history. Sega's shift in design prompted a lawsuit by 3DFX that was eventually settled. Just so you guys know, when your company is going through an IPO, there's what's called a secret period. You cannot say anything. So not only did they were stupid on a business side, they were stupid on an IPO side as well, which is just unfortunate. Sorry, I got off on a rant and I lost my place. With Sega's machine, no operating system resides in the device until it's loaded on a disc with each game. The advantage, Sega executives say, is that developers can always ship products that use the version of an operating system with the newest features and performance enhancements. The operating system used by some Dreamcast titles was developed by Microsoft after 2 years of work with Sega. It was an optimized version of Windows CE supporting DirectX. According to Richard Doherty, president of Envisioneering Group, Microsoft had initially wanted Windows CE to be the Dreamcast's main operating system. It isn't. The Dreamcast boot up sequence was also composed by accomplished Japanese musician Ryuichi Sakamoto. Sega intended to launch the console as part of a comeback after its previous efforts with the Sega Saturn failed. With a strong marketing campaign and reformed studios to develop new creative content, the Dreamcast was initially well-received with a very successful launch and strong sales. Launch titles included Soul Calibur, which Soul Calibur, by the way, is still ranked the best Gen 6 game of all the games combined. Sonic Adventure, Power Stone, Hydro Thunder, Marvel vs. Capcom, House of the Dead 2, and NFL 2K helped the Dreamcast succeed in the first year. Sega Sports titles helped fill the void left by a lack of Electronic Arts sports games on the system. Dreamcast sales grew 156.5% from July 23rd, 2000 to September 30th, 2000, putting Sega ahead of the Nintendo 64 in that period. However, the launch of Sony's PlayStation 2 that year marked the beginning of the end for the Dreamcast. On January 31st, 2001, Sega announced that they were discontinuing Dreamcast production by March 30th of that year. The last North American release was NHL 2K2, which was released in February 2002. According to Bernie Stolar, former president and CEO of Sega America, the Dreamcast was discontinued because the new chair of Sega wanted the company to focus on software. Microsoft's Xbox has been widely considered as Dreamcast's spiritual successor, as many Dreamcast titles lived on in the Xbox. Examples include Metropolis Street Racer, which was turned into Project Gotham Racing on the Xbox, and Jet Set Radio, of which its successor, Jet Set Radio Future, was released for the Xbox. Another factor is the similarity of the Xbox controller S and the Xbox 360 controller to the Dreamcast. So at one point, the two companies could have been so bonded when then-Sega president Isao Okawa wanted Microsoft's Xbox to be backwards compatible with Dreamcast software and held talks with Microsoft chairman Bill Gates shortly before Okawa's death in March 16, 2001, though negotiations eventually fell apart.
That blows my mind, by the way. Could you imagine if the Xbox was backwards compatible with the Dreamcast?
That was one of the things they were talking about mostly because of some things like, well, Shenmue, we're going to get to Shenmue here in a bit. Despite its short lifespan, the Dreamcast was widely hailed as ahead of its time. It saw the release of many new game series which have been considered creative and innovative, such as Crazy Taxi, Jet Set Radio, and Shenmue, the most expensive game ever produced upon release. Ports of games from other platforms were also praised for the system, and the console introduced many aesthetic and hardware design features to be later emulated. It was the first console to render full frames as opposed to interlace only in VGA mode at 640 by 480, and it continues to be held in high regard for pioneering online console gaming. It was the first console to include a built-in modem and internet support for online play. The Dreamcast is still highly regarded and remembered, and its influence can be greatly seen in Microsoft's Xbox, as Sega worked with the company before Xbox's release. As of 2013, the Dreamcast is still supported via small independent companies such as Red Spot Games and the Goat Store. I just like saying the Goat Store. The Goat Store. The Dreamcast was chosen as the best console ever by PC Magazine. I don't know about best console ever, well, but I sure mean, by PC Magazine.
Well, you know what? By the way, Goat Store, it's capital G, capital O, capital A, capital T. I don't know what the initials stand
goat.
For.
Yeah.
But okay, so your opinion on the Dreamcast.
I love the Dreamcast. I still have a Dreamcast in the bedroom. It's I have in the bedroom, I have the Gen 6 machines hooked up. I have the GameCube, the PS2, and the Dreamcast all hooked up to the same television set. Hmm. The same television set that you can see on my profile picture if you look at my profile picture.
I still have a Dreamcast, but it's not hooked up. I just have it sitting there. I guess if I ever need a CD player. I do have games on the Dreamcast that can still run, and I don't know where my MMUs are. That's the only thing I'm bothered by, because all the games I used really needed the MMU, because I did all the sports games, and I did I did the career mode. So.
I hooked up my Xbox back in the living room because I wanted to go back and replay Jet Set Radio Future.
But it's backwards compatible with the Xbox 360.
There was some reason I hooked it up, but
here's the thing: is that not all? You know, I think if you had the dual one that was bundled with Jet Set Radio and another game. It was not backwards compatible with the Xbox 360.
I had the original standalone disc, but it's gone missing from my house, and I don't know why, and that bothers me greatly.
Oh, yeah, I still have Road Rage and
so
Jade
if anybody
Empire.
Out there has a copy of Jet Set Radio Future for the Xbox, I would be more than happy to obtain it from you.
I do. I can always send it to you. I mean, just send it back when you finish.
I'm just sad. I'm sad that it went missing.
Aren't you able to get it on Xbox Originals?
I don't know. I'll have to check, take a look and see if it's on Xbox. I know they put the Dreamcast
on there.
The Dreamcast version is out.
Yeah, I mean,
for the Xbox.
The problem with Jet Set Radio, the Xbox Live Arcade thing, is that you play it again, you realize, oh, you know, it's not quite as good as I remember. I mean, Jet Set Radio Future took a lot of what was problematic with Jet Set Radio.
And
Jet Grind Radio actually is.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's no time limit in Jet Set Radio Future, which I really liked.
But the thing about that is that, the problem with Jet Set Radio or Jet Grind Radio on the XBLA version is you don't have all the songs because of licensing. You know, they had.
Okay.
And the thing is that Jet Set Radio Future, by the way, opened my ears to a lot of music that I would have never heard of Sebo Matto and Birthday Cake without Jet Set Radio Future.
I just like the idea that I now have a fine professional microphone and I can go Jet Set Radio.
Jet Set Radio. Okay, thank you, Doctor. Oh, what was his name? You know what I can do is I can artificially lengthen that so it's like 5 minutes long. So yeah, I love the Dreamcast. As a matter of fact, the Dreamcast was the first console I owned since the SNES, actually. And the thing that I remember was that I was really irritated about everybody on a PC on the Computer Games Magazine board. Everybody was talking about NFL 2K, NFL 2K, NFL 2K, and me being the PC bigot at the time, I was angry at people constantly talking about a console game on my PC forum. But you know, I when I found out the Dreamcast I could get for $50 because you know. it was being remaindered, I picked it up and I had 3 good years with the Dreamcast. And
the NFL 2K game, the NFL games, 2K, 2K1, 2K2, were all very good games for football games. I'm not a fan of football games either.
I prefer the basketball games. And the thing is that they still are the best NBA experiences I've ever had. I mean, yes, you have the NBA 2Ks right now. The ones that were in the Dreamcast were better. Let me put it this way. I have no idea why it is on the Dreamcast, when you had a rookie, you know, a fresh rookie, they could say the first and second name of that rookie. But on NBA 2K, the one now, you have to give it a nickname because the announcer won't say his name.
I don't know. You know, that probably has to do with that whole lawsuit on EA or something.
No, it was these are randomly generated names. That's the issue.
I don't know. Oh, okay.
So, but
the thing that bothered me about the whole folding of the Dreamcast, besides the fact that it was a strong console and they killed it before its time, was that if they had just dummied up for a little bit longer, if they had only talked about killing the console internally and not externally, we could have gotten a couple more really good games out the gate. Half-Life was done. It was ready to go. And then as soon as Sega made their announcement, Half-Life was done.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. It had this Dreamcast stuck around, there would have been 4 consoles out there. I don't think it would have survived anyway.
Well, I don't think it would have survived anyway. I think it probably would have come in third ahead of the GameCube.
But on the other hand, you know, if it wasn't for the Dreamcast, you know, I would never have bought an Xbox.
Okay. I'll accept that.
I mean, because the thing is, not only were, you know, was there, I didn't know at the time that Sega was going to be making Xbox games. However, you know, the Dreamcast whetted my taste for consoles again, you know, because at the time, if you remember, PC gaming was a hell of a thing to do because you had COM ports, you had this, you had that. Even with Windows 98, you know, you still had to worry about a ton of crap and you had to worry about system specs, you know. At least with a console, you know, if a game is released for a console, it's going to work. You know, you don't have to worry about that.
One of the reasons that for gaming, I'm more than willing to spend $500 or $1,000 every 5 years and not have to worry about it. Here's the thing is that,
you know, well, let's put it this way. $500. I'm actually, well, now with the Rice, I'm actually buying another desktop PC. I mean, the same price. But back then, for buying an Xbox 360, I was basically buying a medium range graphic card.
Right, right.
Same price, $300.
Well, and exactly. And I just bought my son a new graphics board. No offense to your graphics board that you were very kind enough to give him.
Well, that was an old graphics board for my old thing. I mean, exactly. He needed it to play, and it was a nice little pit stop. Now he can give it to someone else.
Exactly. It was a pit stop. We've got a GX260 on order, or GX270. I can't remember which. But that graphics board was, you know, $260 or something like that. So, you know, that plus the new power supply that we need to run the new graphics card combines about $335.
Okay. So, well, we're going to move straight to question of the week because we're running long here. And that question of the week is actually made pretty relevant now. What makes you decide to pre-order a game or a console? So that is the question of the week. Jordan, why don't you give a brief answer?
I rarely pre-order stuff. I never pre-order games unless it's something that's legitimately going to be hard to find. For example, the last game I pre-ordered was Steel Battalion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was...
You needed that big controller with 40 buttons. I needed the giant controller.
And it was a, you know, $175 game. That's not something that is, you know, game stores are just going to stock for you.
How much of a tank sim guy were you? I mean, before that. I mean, it's a mech sim guy, but basically it's a tank.
I love mech games. I've always loved mech games.
So you didn't like the idea that if you didn't eject, you were going to be killed permanently?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you didn't eject and you blew up in your mech, it deleted your save game. That was hardcore.
Well, you know,
As far as pre-ordering a console, the PS4 is actually the first console I pre-ordered. I kind of pride myself on just being able to walk into a store and get one on day one.
Well, I think the fact that and they already said that, you know, the PS4 hardware is going to be hard to find. So
yeah,
but
I think all of the hardware initially is going to be hard to find. But you know, in the Northwest, there's a fantastic chain called Fred Meyer, who has been very good to me. I got my my PSP on launch day there. I got my Xbox 360 on launch day there. I got my original Xbox on launch day there. I've never had a problem with Fred Meyer. And with the PS4, they're actually doing pre-orders for the first time. With the Xbox 360, what they did is they came. We were all lined up at midnight, right?
Yes, you said.
And they came out with tickets and they said, "Look, here's the deal. We got 10 machines. Who wants what?" Right. And so they gave you your little card. You could go get breakfast, come back when the store was open. And, you had your place in line was the card that they gave you. So realistically, the pre-order that they're doing now, I put down $50 cash. I got an in-store credit, an in-store gift card for $50. And my name is first on the list. So when I go down on launch day, all I have to do is hand my receipt, hand them my $50 card, and pay the difference, and we're done. So, I think that's an okay way of doing it. It's just a long-term place in line is really what it is. I'm in line for my PS4 right now, and I'm at home on the couch.
Well, here's the thing is with me, I got burned twice. For the Dreamcast, I didn't have to worry about it because, they were being remaindered. But on the Xbox, I was forced to buy a $600 bundle, because it was either that. If you didn't pre-order, you had to buy a big-ass bundle with a bunch of games, which I didn't mind, by the way, because I got the games that I wanted, Halo and Tony Hawk 2X and another game that I kept on trading in. So
the place I went to on the Xbox, I think that was just like GameStop or someplace where
that's what happened with me. I had to buy the bundle from GameStop.
But it was a build your own bundle, right? So they said, look, we don't care what you buy, as long as you buy the console and a couple of games, we're good.
Well,
so I bought the Xbox, Halo, and Project Gotham, which I was going to buy anyway. So
yeah, well, I was just buying it for Halo, but doing that actually introduced me to Tony Hawk. It was the first time I ever played a Tony Hawk game, and I sort of enjoyed it. I ended up with what did I end up with on my third game? I don't know. I forgot what my third game was, but it also came with another controller. Then I got burned badly with Xbox 360 because I didn't pre-order it. And I had to wander around, and eBay screwed me because this person reneged on their thing and ran off with my money. So I got a portion of it back from eBay, but not all of it. So
I got in line at 11 o'clock at night. I had no problem.
Well, here's what happened was that for 2 months, I couldn't find an Xbox. And then Toys R Us blessed them. Had this huge shipment. Now, they didn't have any premiums, but fortunately, if you remember, all the core was the Xbox 360 without a hard drive.
Without the hard drive, right.
So
right.
I just bought it. When you buy the hard drive in the core system, it was the same amount as getting a premium. So right. I did that, So I managed to get it that way. And here's the funny thing is that I had pre-ordered my the Xbox 360 games. So, Perfect Dark Zero was sitting on my desk for 2 months without anything to play it on.
That's harsh.
I ended up trading in because it sucked.
I need to figure out what games I can play on the Surface now. I have a USB CD-ROM DVD drive, so I can hook that up and load up whatever I want.
Cross-platform play with the Xbox 360, right?
Huh?
There are games you can cross-platform play with the Xbox 360.
With the through the store, yeah. I need to see what games are out there.
No, and zombies, and all the XBLA games that have that sort of thing. Actually, see if you can get Carcassonne or one of the board games that are on the Xbox Live Arcade. Although I don't know if you like board games.
I'm not a fan of strategy games, but
you can try Carcassonne. That's the strategy game that people like to play anyway, because you're just putting people on you're putting little people down on stuff.
I played it on Xbox Live Arcade and I was bored.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
As far as games, usually if it's something that I, that's a known quantity, for me, it's like Halo, I know what it is. I'll pre-order that. Although I didn't pre-order it this time. I did not Halo 4.
I don't pre-order games that there are going to be 16 million of them produced. Stuff like Halo, Call of Duty, there's no point in pre-ordering that. It's not going to be hard to find.
Well,
so unless you give something cool for pre-ordering it, then I could see pre-ordering
when
it.
When I pre-order, I spend the extra money for next day shipping so that I don't have to go out. It comes to me. That's why I pre-order.
You're in New York City, so you got a different way of doing things.
Well, I don't mind going outside. You know what? I think of it as just paying for the cab ride.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just want it on. I don't want to go out of my house. I just want it on my lap because I'm a lazy SOB. I don't want to have to smell the other geeks there. I just want it sent to me. Actually,
how much are cab rides in New York City? I imagine they're very expensive, like 50, 60, 70 bucks.
The thing is that GameStop is within walking distance, so it's a bullshit excuse for me.
Okay.
Yeah. But I will say this. When I pre-ordered next day for Halo 3 Legendary Edition, that was a $20 shipping and handling.
When I bought Halo 3, I went to the midnight launch at Best Buy and got a giant inflatable Halo 3 chair.
Yeah, I know.
With
you
speakers
told us
built in. It's still in the box.
Yeah, you haven't opened it yet. I actually was part of the I Love Bees thing. So I got the DVD with all the I Love Bees stuff on it.
Huh.
So that was cool. I mean, I Love Bees is still there if you want to listen to all the recordings they made. And it's a great story, by the way. For those of you who don't know who I Love Bees was, it was an ARG that was done to promote Halo 2. And after it was all finished, you know, you were listening to snippets of a story of different characters from their POV, right? And it was really engaging. So, you know, Jordan, have you ever listened to the I Love Bees stuff?
I did. I was watching it all live as it was happening.
I got to play the first multiplayer, you know, four city thing. So, and I was kicking ass too, even though they reversed the controls, which I hate. You know, where you have to look when you point down to look up. I can't do that. But I still, you know, I grabbed the sword and I just went wild with it. Anyways, that's the question of the week. What makes you decide to pre-order a game or console? Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us a comment at our game at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum. Or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Also subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. And this podcast, even though it had a few news items, just ran way long, I guess. By the way, I also posted a picture of the Rare Japan Only Rare Divers 2000 CX Dreamcast, which was only released in Japan. Why don't you describe it, Jordan?
It's like a big bulbous tube TV with a Dreamcast inside. Very interesting.
So it looks like a little alien.
Yes.
So I would have liked to have owned that Dreamcast.
there's a lot of very interesting pieces of hardware that have come out over the years.
Yeah, I mean, video game never has the Nintoaster.
Do you remember the Pioneer Laser Active? It was a laser disc player that had plugins to play Sega Genesis and NEC Turbo graphics games.
So anyways, we're going to see you next week. This episode ran way long. I'm going to have to figure out a way to edit this thing. Oh, look, it didn't record. No, I'm kidding.
That's okay. You did most of the talking, so it's all right.
You know, here's the thing is that at least whenever that does happen, it didn't happen this time, but at least we're much more prepared on our second time through.
Exactly.
So anyways, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Just feels good.